hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker.
Welcome back to A Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, the Doctor Who commentary podcast. Jason, I've got a question for you.
No.
I do. Have you ever gone down in a submarine?
No. In any of the possible ways that question can be interpreted, no.
Oh, you must have a string of very unsatisfied ladies in your life then. I'm sorry. Oh, sorry. So we're here today to talk about The Sea Devils episode 4.
Indeed we are.
Normally the point in a six-parter where we're going to struggle a bit, but I don't think that's going to be the case here. We've just reached an excellent cliffhanger with the first sea devil sighted coming along the English coast.
Second sea devil, because there was one in the fort in episode 2 that dived out the window.
You know the bit where he does his sonicking now with the minefield?
Yeah.
I have vivid memories of that being in more than 30 years in the TARDIS. Am I imagining that?
No, I think it probably was.
It's the bit where that woman goes, you know, I'd go anywhere with John Pertwee because he's just so damn sexy. Do you remember that bit?
Yeah, I remember that bit.
And what is it? I can think of only two people that can get away with frilly
velvet
shirts.
Jacket and a frill-fronted shirt. Jimi Hendrix and John Pertwee.
It's a great documentary, that, isn't it?
It is. It's good fun.
When they attempted to remake iconic scenes. The dinosaurs in London. The Altons.
It was a really nicely done documentary.
There was a Blake 7 one as well, you know, that they did, but they never released.
Really?
They unleashed it on YouTube, but for whatever reason, they couldn't bring it out as an official release.
Oh, I've not seen that. I'll have to look out for that.
It's
one.
Good. It's very, very good. Well, look, I'm ready to dive straight into The Sea Devils 4, if you are.
I am very ready to dive into The Sea Devils Episode 4.
Then give me a count in.
In 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Straight down the time tunnel. Is this, like, the Doctor Who titles are always supposed to be quite scary. Is this a bit too colourful to be scary?
Quite possibly, yeah. It's very, very bright. I'm always a bit dubious about the colours that show up on these things now, because we know these episodes have been junked and black and white and colour recovered and tweaked and all sorts. So I'm never sure how much of the colour is as it would have been in 1972. Certainly in things like The Claws of Axos, where it's purpley, or, you know, The Mind of Evil and Terror of the Autons, where it's basically pink. So never sure about that, but it is very brightly coloured. It's taking full advantage of the fact that they've gone to colour. Let's whack as much brightness into this as we can.
You know what astonishes me is, given that we live on an island, yeah, with many coastal towns, is how rarely Doctor Who went to the seaside.
Yeah, it's not common.
Goes on location a lot, but usually sort of somewhere on the M25 within reach of London.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what was it? Curse of Fenric.
Curse of Fenric at Lulworth Cove.
Enemy of the World.
Enemy of the World, yes. So we start the Leisure Hive in Brighton, on Brighton
of
Beach.
Of course, yeah.
But there's not a lot.
It just feels like there's a lot of opportunity there.
There's a lot of good coastal areas. I mean, the War Games gets close because it goes to the Cookmere Valley where the little meanders and things are. But doesn't actually go to the seafront.
It's gorgeous around there. A lot of people that visit.
I used to live.
I take them up there. And we reenact the Romans coming over the hill. I've done that with many Australian that's visited. Yeah. Oh, look at it. Pertwee, man of action, straight on the barbed wire.
Straight on the barbed wire.
This is one point where Joe maybe is a little bit...
I've just noticed there's a boom mic that gets into shot there on the bottom left.
Oh, I missed it.
Yeah, never mind.
Oh, I think this was my uncle's biggest objection. Is like, obviously the eyes technically should move and that's how we should see about. But this poor sea devil's got to move his head left to right all the time.
Should their eyes move? As I said, there's plenty of creatures whose eyes don't move in the sea. So,
I mean, you know when you buy a whole fish and the sort of deadness in the eye, that sounds like a bit like that, doesn't it?
I honestly say I never do, but I used to walk past a fishmonger every morning on my way to school. just as they'd laid out the ice with all the fish on it. So quite often saw those and a couple of lobsters.
Is that a dead seagull?
Probably, yes.
I've never noticed that before. Why is there a minefield on this beach?
Well, it is a military installation. They don't want people getting in or off the island.
This is quite extreme. They could just post a guard.
Yeah, they could.
But then you don't have the drama of this scene, do you? The explosions tearing from the sand.
Indeed.
I love the scream. Yeah. If there's one thing Doctor Who, I think 10 times out of 10 got right, it's the sound effects.
Yeah, the sound effects, especially in the 60s and 70s, were brilliant. The soundscapes in the 60s in particular were superb.
It's interesting, on the 50th anniversary album, did you get that?
I don't think I did, no.
So there are some scores in the 70s, but mostly it's soundscapes, like Dick Mills' soundscapes, like Metabelius 3, Planet Service, yeah, and things like that. And when you listen to them, sort of divorced from the... It takes your mind somewhere incredible.
It does. I mean, I remember I had the Doctor Who sound effects LP, although I had it on audio cassette, and a lot of the sound effects on there are the atmospheric sounds, like Metabelius 3, the Exelon City.
Does it have the Croton sound effects on it? They're really weird, no, those.
It didn't have those.
I can hear the Croton sound effects if I...
Yeah.
I recognise that fella as well, the one in the orange suit.
Oh, he's probably cropped up somewhere else. So I'll have to dig out my Doctor Who actors in Doctor Who thread from Twitter and find out.
Post it below, please.
Yeah.
We've had Base Under Siege in part one. We're now doing Base Under Siege again in part four.
Here's the melting doors.
I love all this. And the music's great. The music really builds in this scene. And then you do get that scream again, but I think it's quite effective here. And everybody looks suitably scared.
They do.
Not like a Stephen Moffat story where they're all walking around being sarky buggers.
Yeah.
The artillery looks realistic. The set looks great. You know, Si was telling me, right, in the 80s, the mid-80s, a lot of people were harking back to the Pertwee era as being the golden age of Doctor Who, because it was the complete opposite of what they were getting then, you know, garish colours and camp comedy and all of this. Now, do you remember that?
I don't remember it as such, because in the mid-80s I was much younger, but I can believe it.
But it's stories like this where I can see why myths like that came to be.
Yeah, and this is one of the most solid stories in the whole... not only in the whole Pertwee era, the whole thing, I think, to be honest.
I love this. The Master just tells Trenchard, they're going to come out of the sea and conquer the Earth.
Yes.
I think Trenchard comes across as very naive here. I mean, he's always fairly naive, but...
Yeah, he is very naive. But he's also, I think, you kind of get the feeling that the poor guy is now in too deep in the situation to do anything about it. Here they go with their on horseback and cars. I mean, the budget for this. There's no need for there to be a mounted guard on a horse.
And the fella's not even driving the car. He's there, riding the car.
Yeah, there's no need to have a horse. But we have a horse.
That plus some bizarre that comedy music, though. I'm not sure about that. What's that called? There's a word for that when the music directly informs the action.
Yeah, I can't remember what it is, but yes, I know what you mean.
The Master literally looks like he's dressed up to be evil now, isn't he? It's like
he is, yeah. Was he allowed his clothes, as a prisoner? Why?
Fetch me my evil garb.
Fetch me my evil outfit.
It's time to rip the mask off.
Yeah.
Here we go. Yeah, I believe it was the propellers at the back of the sub, wasn't it? That the saw. Oh, actually, this is great as well. It's all sort of done silently, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Sea Devil grabs his hand and says, take us there.
I think they almost work better mute than when they actually start having a conversation later on.
Do you not like the voice?
I like the voice. I like what they've done with the voice. But I also think this mute creature that they're trying to communicate with, I think it works quite nicely. And it's unusual at this point as well, because the Sea Devils have taken over. But they haven't killed everybody. They are now using the crew to get where they need to go. And yeah, I quite like that one.
I'm sorry, Doctor, but I don't believe a word of it. Well, I can assure you, we didn't walk 10 miles here to tell you fairy stories.
Yes.
I like this. Well, see, I could have done with a bit of this in the latter Pertwee stories between him and the Brigadier. Because it was very spiky like this in season 7. There's Joe doing all the exposition. I'm like, you see, Jason.
This is one of those weird moments. It's kind of, I think it's called the Mandela effect, where you remember things wrong. Because I remember seeing this sequence of the Joe going, they want to take over the Earth and retake, and the Doctor going, I know, let me do the talking. And in my head, until I saw it on VHS again, in my head, he went, no, Joe, let me do the talking. You see, they want to take over the Earth. And that was stuck in my head until I saw the video.
Instead, he's just scoffing a plate of sandwiches.
He's scoffing a plate of sandwiches.
I mean, this is awful. Look, he goes to give Joe the scruffy bits of lettuce that's left on the plate.
They're some pretty limp-looking sandwiches as well, frankly.
Look, they've cut off the crusts.
I know.
He'll have no airs on his
chest.
What
have they got in the sandwich?
It's cheese, apparently.
Is it?
Mm. Yeah. It's just terrible, that.
It's terrible.
Inverse of RHIP in Day of the Daleks, isn't it?
Yeah.
Joe, how thoughtful. Yeah. Love that, Sue. Oh, he's coming around, finally. 4 episodes in.
Yes.
Blythe there. I'll get you some more sandwiches. So, because this submarine has lost contact now, this is why we go down in the diving bell. And that's the sequence where I think the pace stops completely. It's a sort of a 5-minute sequence of him getting in, it going down. I do love the shot of the Sea Devil at the window, where he sort of pops and goes, hello!
Oh, telegraphist Bowman's popped his head back out. We've almost forgotten he was there, but there he is.
We've not seen him for a while, have we? Mm-hmm. He has a couple of moments with Jane Blythe, doesn't he? Where there's a suggestion that they're quite familiar.
Maybe.
That's Hulk again, though. I think Hulk has that Rusty Davis thing of taking incidental characters, giving them moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You see how he's just sort of playing about with those buttons there like that? Mm. It reminds me of the Master going across the chessboard in The Five Doctors. He's just sort of making it up.
Making it up as he goes along, yeah.
Yeah, come on. He's clearly fucking sending a signal. Treasure, will you wake up?
Oh, he's given some thought to it, so I'll have to give the authorities notice. I do like the fact that they've got a badge for this castle, this security thing, that sort of S-shaped symbol that they've got. Just the little details that they put into these things.
You know the uniforms that the guards are wearing? Mm. Terrence Sticks takes Michael Bryant to task and goes, well, what on earth are they wearing? He goes, that's the uniform of Special Master Guards, says Michael Bryan. And you can just see Terrence Dean. I mean, you can't see it because it's a commentary. You can imagine him giving him a poison look.
Oh, here they come.
Is this day for night? Because it's very dark. Or is it the end of the day?
No, I think it's probably day for night.
Quickly, get the shot in. We're losing the sun.
Probably got a filter on the lens for it.
But there's 6 Sea Devils
six
there.
Sea Devils. And here is...
My God, there's another 6.
Definitely not the same 6,
no.
Of course.
I believe we might see another 6 in a second.
Entirely different 6 Sea Devils, naturally.
They should have shaken up the numbers, made it 5, maybe. You know? Every time it's 6, it makes it a bit obvious. Oh, here we go. So he is trying to do his duty.
He is Trenchard actually trying to do something.
So do you remember this sequence in the book?
It's been a long time since I've read the book. But I do remember the bit where after he's been killed.
So he doesn't. He leaves the safety catch on, doesn't he? So he doesn't.
Captain Hart takes off the safety catch so that he won't be thought of as a
idiot
going out.
That's a lovely moment. That's really, really lovely. That's one of those moments that a lot of people talk about in the books, of how you can embellish the stories without changing any other plot details or anything like that.
Yeah.
And just adding layers. Look at that picture was on his desk there. Was that his mum and dad?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't see.
Yeah, look, he knows that the master's up to no good.
Yeah, and the master's given up all pretense at this point.
The direction I really love here, because we see him shooting, we don't see his death. The sea devils walk in a completely sort of mute sequence. There's no dialogue. And then one moves aside and the camera just zooms out onto his body in the corridor.
That's a really nice bit of direction.
It's very well done.
It's looking away from the bits that you don't need to see. We know he's going to die. We don't need to see him actually shot down by a sea devil.
You know what Michael E. Bryant's doing? He's honing his craft on Doctor Who. And I think he does have the occasional off day. I think those effect sequences as they're going through the mineshaft of maggots in the Green Death are a little unwise.
They're not great.
And there are some moments in Revenge of the Cybermen as well, which are less than compelling.
Yeah.
But you know where we end up. Robots are deaf.
Mm.
Which is, I still think, is one of the best directed stories ever.
Yeah.
And there we go. Two special master guards are about to have it. Yeah. Oh. Sorry, I'm not supposed to be laughing. You should have seen me when I was watching Resurrection of the Daleks. The deaf's in that.
Disco deaf.
That was so authentic. Well done.
Love it.
You've been exterminated by a Dalek or two then.
Once or twice. I shall attend to the security of my prisoner. I love this. Trenchard is an absolute idiot, but
that's great. They look... Are some sea devils darker than others? Some are green, some are brown.
They're sort of brown on location and green in the studio, which is a bit weird.
It's the same mask, though, right?
I don't know.
God, maybe the colour. They went in the sea. The colour drained off the masks.
There we go. There you go. There.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, that's a brilliant piece of direction.
And you look, all of this, the sort of, they're nodding their heads to each other around, crashing them on the master. It's great. It's dramatic.
It is.
And that's good. That's a very traumatic set piece right in the middle of the story. Well, I think you kind of need it.
Yeah, you definitely need something big.
And we're shifting away from the prison now because Trenchard's dead.
Yeah.
So that plot, that is effectively over.
Yeah, that's it. Trenchard's dead. The whole master is a prisoner thing. Nope, the master is now fully in control.
I mean, I will say, I think the master's far more effective being smooth as in the prison than he is when he's down in those sea devil sets, sort of going, no, don't listen to the doctor. The humans will destroy you.
Yeah, so this is the bit that he embellished in the book, where Hart just flicks off the safety catch from his pistol.
And the tide has turned as well with Captain Hart. Now he's on side. We've got the full force of the Navy behind the Doctor. And that truly comes to bear in episode 6.
It does. And you also get the feeling in this sequence that, you know, because we saw in episode 2 when Trenchard tried to do the diversion by talking about golf, the bit where they find Trenchard's body, you do get the feeling from the way it Richfield plays Captain Hart, you believe they knew each other, and he has lost, maybe not a friend, but a colleague that he's known for many years.
That sequence and earlier, where he comes in and he's talking about the Gulf, and he's going, oh, John, not now, and all of this.
Yeah.
There's a familiarity, isn't there?
There is. And so that sequence there. And like I say, they explain the Master used Trenchard's patriotism against him. And that's a very Malcolm Hulk.
Yeah.
Thing to do, and there's whole arguments about how you can patriotism can be used as an excuse for doing some really shitty stuff.
I bet, I don't remember the book, I've got it on the shelf, maybe I should read it again. I bet that leans into that more in the book, just like the Doomsday Weapon lent into that very cynical view of the future in the Doomsday Weapon far more. I almost feel like Hulk.
You get a bit seasick in these sequences.
No, I love being on the water, so it just feels like I'm on the water. Are you good on water?
I am not good on water, no.
You couldn't go on a cruise ship then?
Certainly not, no. I've done cross-channel a few times, and obviously the Isle of Wight ferry. We did a sightseeing tour around a cruise around Malta on our honeymoon, and there had been a storm the previous night. We didn't know that a ship had been run aground on that storm, otherwise it wouldn't have gone. But where the ship was moored, because the water was still quite choppy, the gangplank was going up about 4 feet and waving around. So they literally had somebody holding onto it, waiting for it to come down, and then going, okay, one, two, wait. And then he'd wait for it to come down again. Okay, one, two, three, oh, wait. It's like, okay. And I spent half that sightseeing tour laying on a bench on the deck because I felt so queasy.
Oh, bless you.
Then we got round the other side where it was calmer and I was like, oh, that's much better. But yeah, the first half of that tour, I was lying down going, I will not be sick, I will not be sick, I will not be sick. So no, I do not do well on water.
I literally just had a holiday, like a 3-4 day holiday on Mark's parents' boat. And we just went up and down the river loads. It was great. I had a wonderful time.
Yeah, no, I get terribly motion sick. So.
Yeah, we stall now. After that brilliant set piece in the prison, and you know, and I get it, we're showing off some more hardware and it's great. They've got a real diving bell.
Yeah.
And again, it's all beautifully done. The sets are done, well done. The moment where he comes through the window is well done.
Yeah.
But I don't know, did you like this cliffhanger? He's gone. Well, duh, we not sort of knew that. I think maybe we should... Oh, look, Pertwee's going bald. Kate Manning does tell that story about his bald spot.
Well, he's in his 50s at this point.
Now, yeah, you just don't think it, do you? Because he's so dynamic.
That's what they all, you know, when Peter Capaldi took on the role, and it's, oh my God, we can't have a doctor in his 50s. It's like, what? William Hartnell, John Pertwee, they were in their 50s.
I'll tell you what my objection to this is. Now this feels like a documentary to me. Less of a drama, more of a...
Now we're on to a let's show off the hardware that we've got access to.
But they do that later on. They do that in when they got the hovercraft and everyone coming out with all the guns and all of that. But that's really, really exciting.
Yeah.
This is a bit of a laboured... And we know he's gone, right? Like, it's no great surprise.
Yeah, it does take a long time to go down. And then it's winched up so quickly that he would have probably got the bends anyway.
The bends? I've not heard that for a while. What I do like, though, is they save a huge amount of the budget for those last two episodes. Like, the action quota in those last two episodes. This really ends on a high.
Yeah. Another multi-level set there where they descended some ladders to get in. Makes it all a bit more authentic.
But as well, sort of the oxygen dials and the canisters and all of that are around. It's a thoughtful set design, and, you know, I'm going to say it again, that's not always the case in Doctor Who. Do you remember Carfel? Exactly. Hang on a minute. I love this. He pops his head in to say hello. Yeah. What brings you down here on the seabed, eh?
Yeah.
And what is that bizarre contraption that they're taking him away in?
And how do they transfer him?
It's like a sort of airlock.
There's that fort again in the background.
Where? Oh, yeah. Oh, you see Kate Manning there do a little jump?
Yes.
Okay, we've seen it go down. We're now going to see it come up.
See it come up. And
we'll open it up. Someone will go in. The heart goes in, doesn't it?
The heart goes in.
Then
shakes
Joe
his head,
goes in.
Then Joe goes in.
Yeah, there have been more exciting cliffhangers.
Definitely.
I mean, they were using those diving bells way back, weren't they? Like, that's an old piece of equipment, even at this point.
Mm.
Oh, actually, it's a bit quicker than I thought. That came out quite fast, actually.
It did. Ludicrously so.
But you could have had Hart go in and go, he's gone. Couldn't you?
Yeah.
But no, we cannot resist, because Katie Manning's got such a beautiful face, and she does.
Katie Manning's brilliant in this and in general. And I watched this in 1992.
Yeah.
When it was on BBC. And my first Pertwee, my first Joe Grant story, and so on and so forth. If you had told me in 1992 that in 2023 I would be sitting in a cinema with hundreds of other Doctor Who fans
and
watching
Manning.
The Sea Devils on the big screen with Katie Manning sat in the audience with us, I'd have thought you were insane. There's no way that would ever happen. And yet, there it was.
The opportunities that are afforded to this fandom, we're incredibly lucky.
Oh,
aren't we?
It's brilliant. It is brilliant.
You were, yeah, because we were there together. We both went to a Utopia with Katie Manning as well, didn't we?
We did.
Did you meet her up close and personal in that? And I'm not suggesting any impropriety there at all.
Yeah, and I'd met her 3 weeks previously at Devil's End, and again the year before that as well.
God, she started to recognise you now.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah.
Didn't I see you 3 weeks ago?
Well, she said she posted on Twitter the day before the Utopia convention about going up there, and I said I was looking forward to it. I haven't seen you in 3 weeks. And she laughed, and then yeah, when she saw me, she was like, "Hello," and she because I saw her in Devil's End. 3 weeks before Utopia, but I'd also seen her in there the previous year, and so I didn't go to get her autograph or anything that there was in, but I did say, I just want to say hello again, it's nice to see you again, because I saw you last year. And, oh, of course you did, yes. And she remembered, and she said, you know, sometimes people say, oh yes, of course, yeah, and you know they don't actually have a clue who you are.
But if they can pinpoint something that you did together.
But
then
she did remember me, and then, yeah, and then again on Utopia, so, you know.
That's like Colin with me, you know, the first time he flirted with me, the second time he pecked me on the cheek, he goes, oh, I wonder what's going to happen next time we meet. I'm like, oh, God, please. But, and I've said this before on Hamsters, but it's worth repeating, Katie Manning always has the longest queue at every convention I ever go to, and that is because she insists on giving everybody a couple of minutes of her time. They're paying good money to see her, and she makes sure they all get a moment.
She makes sure they get a moment. And I remember seeing somebody saying, yeah, we need to stop Katie from talking to everybody. So you are not going to stop Katie from talking to everybody. You know, at the BFI, someone said, oh, there was a car booked about half an hour ago. What these people are. Why would you book a car so soon after the finish of the screening? You know she's going to want to hang around. And I feel I'm very fortunate, actually, because although I didn't get her autograph at these other things, I'd already got it at the first Devil's End convention, I was fortunate enough to see and photograph for them a couple of people's first meeting with her.
And that was brilliant. Amazing.
It was brilliant
to
see.
What a lovely gift for them.
And I'm glad I was able to get those pictures for them. So, yeah.
The funniest thing I ever remember about Katie Manning was the second time I went to Utopia, so it was the same venue, and she's at the door, right, with a group of fans just gossiping, and she goes, oh darlings, I really must go, you know, my train is in half an hour, blah blah blah, and I went off and had some food and came back an hour and a half later and she's still there, and she said, oh darlings, I really must go, like that. And I thought, hang on, I'll come back an hour later. So she really, really does, she gives people their moment. And I think for a lot of people, I don't really, that's not what I go to the conventions for. I don't really need those moments. But for a lot of people, it means a great deal. So
yeah, it does. As I said, I'm privileged and pleased that I was able to capture those couple of people's first time meeting her.
Some actors, and I'm not going to name any names, but some actors, it is just sort of a factory line of sign it, right, next.
Yeah.
You know, she knows it's an experience.
Yeah.
So, well, let's end the episode there on some Katie Manning love.
Absolutely.
But also, as well, the way she can embellish a story in the commentaries, the ones with her and Barry Letts are the best. Because he's sitting there going, Katie, are you sure that's what happened? Because I do remember it being a lot subtler than that. She goes, oh, darling, no, shh. I'm telling my story.